Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Timber Living Log Cabins. For your perfect workspace, living space or hideaway, timberliving.ie.
Time to have a look at what's coming up on our big and small screens in the week ahead. I'm joined today by Tara Brady, writer and film critic at the Irish Times, and John Maguire, film critic with the Business Post. Welcome, guys.
Thank you, Brendan. How are you?
So, look, the big beast this week is Succession. The fourth and final season starts tomorrow on Sky Atlantic and on Now. John, what can you tell us?
Well, the preview of the first four episodes that I watched came with a note from this showrunner, Jesse Armstrong, to say, please don't say anything about Succession. And, you know, you're obliged to abide by that. And we will, because there's no point in ruining a soap opera. And this is the shiniest soap opera.
Yeah.
It's Dynasty. It's King Lear.
Totally.
There's a bit of Faust in there, too. I mean, it is this dramatic soap opera. So with that in mind, we can say that the gang has all returned for one last run around the extraordinarily privileged and cutthroat world of the 1% of the 1% that these people live in. The Roy family, their associated spouses and hangers-on, and the unfortunates who work for them or who are married, and even more unfortunates who are married to them or connected with them. And I don't know what they're looking for really here. Is it to become a little bit richer? The big story, which has guided the thing throughout the four seasons now, is who is going to succeed? Who is going to acquire this glittering kingdom that Logan Roy, Brian Cox, is leaving behind him when he goes? And which one of them, like King Lear, which one is going to take the spoils? And that's the big issue. That's the big question. Okay. And the rest of it is, you know, how do they relate to one another? How do they remain as a family? How are they even talking to each other at this stage? So you have Shiv, who's played by Sarah Snook. You've got her husband, who was the turncoat Tom, who played by Matthew McFadden, who turned coat.
Yeah, so he betrayed his wife and has gone with Logan, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. He's turned his coat. Then you have the very unpredictable but slightly chastened Kendall Roy, who's played by Jeremy Strong, and Kieran Culkin's the best character in the show. He's kind of satirical, snide, savvy Roman, who's a great character.
Tara, I think the best character in the show is the expensive, luscious knitwear and the gorgeous stealth well clothes, like really plain clothes that, you know, like are Bruno Cucinelli or something that cost them thousands.
I think that's really important. The aesthetic of the show is really important, and it's worth noting it's one of the few shows that is shot on 35mm. It's proper film.
Okay.
And by golly, it shows. I mean, you wouldn't think it would make that much of a difference, but it really does. It adds
the sheen of the shine of the helicopter, it gives lovely grain.
Yeah.
I love the fact that initially when Jesse Armstrong came up with the show, initially he had this idea that that Brian Cox was going to be killed off in the first thing. But he's such a compelling character, and the whole thing is so compelling. And, you know, to go back to John's King Lear analogy, it would have been like taking King Lear out of King Lear, which wouldn't work at all. I think the other brilliant thing about this new season is that they're winding it up. This is definitively the last season. And it's a real problem, I think, in American. And I think it's a mark of the fact that it's a British creator with a lot of British writers. And, you know, if you think about classic British, like, you know, particularly comedy writing, Fawlty Towers, there's only a certain amount of episodes, and that's what makes it brilliant, is that it's focused. Whereas we all know shows that go on
a season
too long.
We're stuck in things now that are going on and on.
And
you might not get an ending because they might get cancelled then.
So I think that's a brilliant thing.
Will people be satisfied with what you've seen so far is good?
Okay. I think as it reaches this conclusion, the show has never sacrificed the satirical impulses. It is a funny show, and it has never tried to turn itself into a morality play. It's never gone down the road of fan wish fulfillment. It's stuck to its guns right to the end.
And they were doing awful people before White Lotus ever talked.
These are the worst of the worst, Brendan. Yeah, no doubt about it.
Tara, other awful people. So Yellow Jackets, which was on Sky, is coming back now on Paramount Plus sneakily for a second season. But I've watched one. I'm having trouble feeling my way back into it.
Yeah, if you remember as well, the first season, it took about four episodes, I think, for it to sort of, and then you're like, oh yeah, I get it, because you are cutting between two timelines, that's the first thing, and also you're not entirely sure what's going on, and you're getting these occasional images, and you're going, oh my god, is that cannibalism, these kind of flashes of like traumatic images, and you're trying to kind of piece them together, and it takes the full season to piece them together. So I have faith that that's exactly what we're looking at here.
Yeah.
But I mean, I love the pitch, as everyone knows, is that there,
Well, not everyone.
And I don't want to say too much because it's one of those shows that is really well talked about and people are still coming along to, like Succession, and watching from the start as a block. It's a soccer team, an American soccer team from New Jersey. There's a high school soccer team. Their plane crashes in the mid 90s in the Canadian wilderness, and they have to survive. And we immediately have hints that there's cannibalism and from the flashbacks that we see. So that's not giving too much away. And we cut to the adult survivors of those, and they're played by people like Melanie Lynskey, Juliette Lewis, Christina Ricci, who are all people who were absolute superstars in the mid 90s. So everything dovetails very nicely. So it's a show that presses all the buttons. It has these kind of career comebacks built into it, and actors that people are like going, oh, whatever happened to her? Oh, there she is. So it has that. It has, you know, cannibalism is very voguish in television at the moment. Survivalism is very voguish in television at the moment. And then it has this strange occult thing going through. And suddenly with the first episode, we're, you know, not to give too much away again, but we're introduced to this additional character and this semi-religious or spiritual cult. So suddenly you're looking back on the first season and going, oh, maybe that wasn't just like survival cannibalism. Maybe that's something even more sinister than we thought it was. So that's so a really compelling show.
A lot going on there. Yeah, yeah. And funny as well.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. John, Ted Lasso, the third, and I think we're told final season up on Apple, and I haven't succumbed to the third one yet, but you get sucked into its mush, don't you? And you end up...
I love Ted Lasso.
Yeah.
I like,
it's warm.
It's warm. It's optimistic. He's a genuine character. This is Jason Sudeikis plays Ted Lasso. He's the American soccer coach again. He doesn't eat anybody, but he comes over to save a struggling Premiership club from relegation. Over the course of the two seasons previously, he has his ups and downs. He struggles with his mental health. He's going through a divorce. He gets betrayed by people central to him in the club. But he keeps going. And he keeps going with a smile on his face and an upbeat tone. And he's always got a good word. And it works. You feel better after watching Ted Lasso than you did before. And it is this endless optimism, contrasted with beautifully observed tiny, small characters who, again, remain true to themselves.
And a Roy Keane character as well.
The Roy Keane character, which is brilliant. He's absolutely superb, played by Brett Goldstein. And he's aping Roy Keane, but he's also got this tender side to him. Everybody has two sides in Ted Lasso. Everybody has what they're trying to do and the struggles that they're going through in their daily lives, and then they have a private life. And both are explored with the same kind of balance. That's the genius of the show, really, is that they are able to expand and go down tiny little pathways that you'd never expect anything interesting to be at the end of, and yet they find the same little nugget of gold.
Yeah.
It's really,
well, ultimately
really
warm, feel-good TV. Actually,
yeah,
Apple,
it is.
Apple,
but that's no small achievement, Brent.
Shrinking, which I just watched, the last one just came up yesterday, also on Apple. A very warm glow, I'd have to say.
That's no small achievement in today's television landscape, Brendan, to remain true to that kind of tender comic spirit while becoming a global phenomenon, and to have these kind of immersive, you're really immersed with these characters, and to come out of it at the other end feeling better about yourself, I think that's a rare thing. It's really, really cool.
You're right.
On Apple TV
you're
Plus,
right.
Yeah.
Edgy, overrated. Tara, Keanu, we'll do a bit of cinema. We might come back to TV. So Keanu is back. John Wick Chapter 4. I thought this was like it's basically a film about stunts.
Yeah,
and they've made a fourth one now.
No, you're right. But it's not just a film about stunts. I mean, well, Chapter 4 leaves it open ended as to whether or not there's a Chapter 5. But Keanu said he's doing would like to do a Chapter 5. So you can be sure that Keanu will get his Chapter 5. There's also a spin-off movie, Ballerina, coming out, and there's also a spin-off TV series, The Continental, based on Ian McShane's hotel within the film.
So there's a Wikiverse now.
There's a whole Wikiverse coming down the line. I mean, the great thing about, as you say, it's like Chad Stahelski, who was the director and creator, co-creator of the franchise. He's a stuntman. A lot of the two filmmakers that and the people that came up with the idea initially were stunt people. So the thing, the great thing about John Wick, and the reason why critics and fans and lots of people are behind it, is that it's what happens when the person who knows the most about the job gets to do the job, which is a very radical idea, okay, especially in Hollywood. But it does mean it's an action film which is based on the premise, what if an action film was all action? And that's what you get. You get, now, sometimes that does get to be a little bit, certainly over John Wick, which is almost 3 hours long. It's longer than Apocalypse Now, and they both feature Lawrence Fishburne. So it does after a while get, wow, I've been watching you kick people's heads for like at least the last 15 minutes.
Okay, but it's better than it sounds, obviously.
But it
yeah?
is, no, but okay. it is actually compelling. And I think a huge part of that is obviously Keanu. I mean, it's interesting the films that have tried to work in the same style, like Atomic Blonde, and it had Charlize Theron and people like Charlize Theron, but people don't love Charlize Theron in the way they love Keanu. And a huge part of that is Keanu and the fact that he's tied it up a little bit. There's a few nods to The Matrix and he still has the same haircut. God bless him.
Okay, John Wick, Chapter 4 in cinemas now. John, God's Creatures is the new Paul Mescal film. It's getting rave reviews.
Well, it's not going to get a rave review right now, actually, Brendan, unfortunately. This is, although it has good points and bad points, this is the American directing team, Saoláidh Davis and Anna Rose Hallmer. And they bring an outsider's perspective to a very Irish story, this rural Irish Gothic, which is set in Killybegs. And it's co-written by first-time screenwriter Shane Crowley, and the producer Fola Cronin O'Reilly, who did Lady Macbeth with Florence Pugh a couple of years ago. And it has a middle-aged mother, played by the dependably excellent Emily Watson, no problem there. And she offers a fateful alibi to her son, who's a returned immigrant from Australia, who's played by Mescal, who I think is underused in the film. Mm-hmm. And after he's accused of a sexual assault in the town, she offers this alibi and everything spins out of control for them. And it's a film that is imbalanced, unfortunately, because we really only hear one side of the story. And there's even a line of dialogue in the film, where a character called Erin, who's played by Tony O'Rourke, who's Emily Watson's daughter, her only daughter, who lives with her in the house with her little baby. And she asks her, do you not want to hear the other side of the story? Do you not want to hear the victim, who's played by Aunt Aisling Franciosi? Do you want to hear her side of the story? And Emily Watson's character says, no, I don't, but I would have liked to have heard it, and I think the film needed it. Okay. And that's a real imbalance.
Okay. All right.
And it might have done that. And there's a kind of a doom in this film. There's a kind of a sense, a deadening sense of doom in it, and that adds to an inevitability in the plot, which is kind of unfortunate. And because Mescal deserves better after his recent triumphs. I mean, he deserves a better character.
Yeah.
And he deserved options.
So we maybe wait
them.
For that on streaming. So God's Creatures in cinemas now. Tara, if we do one more film before we finish, do you want to do Infinity Pool, or is Five Devils more worth telling people?
Listen, it's a really hard weekend to pick because I can't remember a weekend where there were so many brilliant films released in one week.
The Beast is absolutely
brilliant, like absolutely really nervy thriller in which Kalish and Kulchis face off with this townie who's come to live in their rural community. It's a really nervy thriller, and then two thirds of the way through, it becomes an entirely different kind of really nervy thriller. And The Five Devils, absolutely fantastic, gorgeous looking film. It brings you back to almost classic Technicolor cinema. It like really mysterious, witchy kind of film about a little girl who has a superpower. She can enter moments in time by recreating scent. And it's not like anything you've ever seen before. Infinity Pool is Brandon Cronenberg, son of David Cronenberg. Now, as with his previous two films, there's certainly something of the family in the way he
Nepo
creates.
Nepo baby. So all worth in the cinema as well, I'm saying.
They're all worth seeing.
Infinity Pool, The Beast and The Five Devils. Okay, thank you very much, Tara Brady and John McGuire. We'll leave it at that.